This is Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze, giving you the advice and information on protecting what matters the most in today's world. Phone lines open, 238-5775, 238-KPRL.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Protecting What Matters. I'm Barry Fisher.
And I'm Susan Blaze.
PWM, Protecting What Matters, is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore our history, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Today's show features Teresa Rhine and Jesse Hancox of the Teresa Rhine Law Group, with offices in Paso Robles and Riverside. Today's topics will include proper business entity structure, buy, sell, and shareholder agreements, how the right tax structure for your business leads to tax efficiency, and the importance of business valuation. One word of caution, no free legal advice will be given out on today's show. All right. The call in with questions or comments, 805-238-KPRL, 238-5775. All right, Susan, you got, we both have opening stories today.
Yeah, I'll keep mine kind of short. I just wanted to talk a bit about the central bank digital currency that's being bandied about these days. I did some research. I won't have time to talk about a lot of it here, but it's the whole issue of the central bank digital currency has brought the issue of money and banking back into the central of American politics, which is good, because in the past, going way back to the 1890s, the American public was very concerned about banking and how this would be done. There's been several major changes, as you well know, from the gold standard, then away from the gold standard. And when we put the central bank in 1913, it was supposed to prevent banking panics and crack down on wildcat inflation. However, as we see, we have ended up with just the opposite. It became a printing press for the government. It's enabled us to fund all kinds of things like World War II and all those other wars we've been in ever since. And it's led to incredible inflation and instability. And now that same institution wants to take over our money and put in a central digital banking system, which would give them total control over everything we do.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Exactly. And so it's just important that we stay on top of this, that we keep using cash, that we be aware of what's going on. And when decisions come up with the Congress, we let them know how we feel about this, because it can really be the end of freedom as we know it, like it is in China, where people, if you read the wrong book or go to the wrong meeting, they can cut you off from your money.
Well,
it's not a good thing.
They can also track exactly how you spend your money everywhere.
Exactly. So anyway, so I didn't bring that up.
That's a great topic. But I have some good news this morning. I got an email from Stephen Anderson, who's the CEO of PLF, Pacific Legal Foundation, which is a public interest law firm, and they based out of Sacramento. And they had a huge win at the Supreme Court this week. And I'm just going to read parts of this to you because it's really important. And I know a lot of our agricultural, our ag, and our cattlemen who listen in, this is a big win, and there's going to be some more big wins, I think, before the end of the season. Today, the Supreme Court delivered a major property rights victory for all Americans in PLF's 15th win before the nation's highest court. It started in Montana with a fight to stop the U.S. Forest Service from opening private property to the public. But when Will Wilkins and Jane Stanton sued the Forest Service, the lower courts took the agency's word that the neighbors were too late to fight back. Case dismissed, no questions asked, or even allowed. This legal hurdle is a frequent government tactic to avoid court scrutiny, and the courts go along with it, closing their doors to property rights disputes. Yesterday, I believe this was, the court ruled that a 6-3 ruling in Wilkins versus the United States, the court rebuked the procedural manipulations that denied Will and Jane their rightful day in court, reversed the lower court's dismissal of their case, and cleared the way for all property owners to defend their rights in federal court. The decision also reaffirms that property rights are indeed among the most important civil rights that Americans have, deserving equal status among all other institutional protections and a full-throated defense in federal courts. Stay tuned for more. This is only the second of three PLF cases before the Supreme Court this session. The court opened the term also with Sackett versus EPA, which is a big water versus the U.S. Against the EPA. This is going to be a huge decision on this one. And Tyler versus Hennepin, which is a case that has been held against counties that foreclose on people's property and snap up the equity in that property, the excess equity. These are two huge property rights cases, and I will be following them for you. Sorry to take this time away from you, but it's a good one. Let me introduce Teresa Ryan and Jesse Hancox. Teresa is the principal of the Teresa Ryan Law Group. The firm focuses on developing comprehensive and sound estate and charitable tax plans for business owners, individuals, and families. Teresa acquired her legal expertise at UC Santa Barbara, where she graduated with a BA and high honors in law and society, and also Loyola Law School, where she earned a Juris Doctorate at the age of 23. Her strong educational background is enhanced by over 35 years in the field of estate planning, trust administration, and business tax law. Teresa is a frequent presenter at seminars for the general public, as well as instructing other attorneys and professionals on estate planning, charitable planning, and giving planned giving and family business succession planning. She's also a New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today best-selling author with multiple books published since 2012, including The Dog Lived and So Will I, The Dogs Were Rescued and So Was I, and Poppy in the Wild. We'll have to do a whole show on those, okay?
They are not legal books.
Okay. Jesse, Teresa's going to take the first segment here, so I'm going to introduce Jesse on the other side of the next segment. So, Teresa, first question for you. When should a business owner think about the property entity structure for their business, and what are the primary considerations involved?
Starting right off with the lawyer answer, right? It depends. It depends on the type of business. But the basic answer is always going to be right when you start up. I mean, that's the time to consider what kind of business you're going to have, what kind of entity is appropriate for it. Sometimes that's a sole proprietorship, not usually. So limited liability company, corporation, what kind of corporation? There are different types of corporations, are all things you want to consider right off the bat, because you're going to have tax concerns, right? No matter how much or how little money you make, you want to keep whatever it is, and you don't want to pay any more than you have to in taxes. So the structure you come up, you decide with, decide to begin with, is really going to make a difference there. I always encourage everybody, I know it sounds like a big expense, but you need to see both a CPA and a business law attorney when you're starting a business, because there are tax ramifications to almost everything you do, and there are legal issues you probably haven't even thought of. Can you use the name you want to use for your business? Do you have the right permitting? What kind of contracts are you going to use? Even if it's just a simple sales contract or receipt, you want to make sure you have the right things in place. So right off the bat is the answer to that question.
I would just add, even though it seems like you want to pinch every penny in the beginning, if you build the right foundation for your business, you're going to be so much better in the long run.
Yeah, it's going to cost more to do it later.
Right. So what is the difference between a limited liability company and a corporation?
Good question. And there's a lot of confusion on this, particularly because sometimes people refer to limited liability companies as limited liability corporations, and that's not correct. So the biggest difference between the two entities, they're taxed slightly different, but limited liability companies came into effect probably 20 years ago. They are a state law creation, and they are meant to be less formal than a corporation. So one of the main differences is you don't have the same amount of paperwork. You don't have to keep minutes. You don't have to necessarily elect officers, that sort of thing. So they're a little bit less formal. But a primary difference is that if you talk to the IRS, and I hope you never have to, but the IRS knows nothing about limited liability companies. That's purely a creature of state law. So for tax purposes, if you have a limited liability company, you have to choose, are you going to be taxed as a corporation, taxed as a partnership, or taxed as a disregarded entity, which if we can get into a little bit more later, might be more appropriate. But that's primarily the difference, the different tax structures for them, and then less formality for a limited liability company.
Which is why you want to talk to a CPA as well as an attorney.
Right.
Big deal. Yeah.
Okay. So how do one of these entities, whether it's an LLC or a corporation, how does it protect a business owner's assets? Because I think a lot of people are under the misconception that a living trust gives them asset protections. And so that's a real big one.
That is a big misconception also, yes. And so we'll just set that one aside by saying, no, a living trust in California does not give you any asset protection. That's not what living trusts are meant for. A living trust is meant to avoid probate and have a plan in place in the event you become incapacitated or pass away. But in California, a living trust does nothing to protect your assets. There are states that have asset protection trusts. A whole nother show again, but that California is not one of those. So even if you have a trust, you still need your business in the right entity. So if you have it in a limited liability company or a corporation and you get sued, so you have a creditor out there for something in the business, say somebody comes into your business, trips and falls and gets hurt and sues. They can only come after the assets that are inside the business. So they can't come after your home because they don't have a judgment against you. They have a judgment against the business. That's one of the main protections. The difference between limited liability and corporation is not something I explained to you in 10 seconds, so we'll circle back.
Sounds good. All right. Well, when we return, we're going to discuss business continuation plan. Well, maybe we'll pick up where Teresa stopped, and then we will go on with business continuation planning and the importance of buy-sell agreements. We'll see you in a couple.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Rich Dennison. President Biden this afternoon again calling for Congress to act on an assault weapons ban after yesterday's mass shooting at a Christian school in Nashville that killed 3 9-year-old children and 3 adults.
As a nation, we owe these families more than our prayers. We owe them action.
Police say the 28-year-old woman blamed for yesterday's shooting was armed with 2 assault-style rifles and a handgun. She was shot and killed by police. Counter-terror police in Belgium say they may have thwarted at least one attack by conducting several raids.
8 people have been arrested over 2 cases police believe to be connected. What's still unknown is the precise target or targets of the attack. This as a trial takes place over the deaths of 32 people in Belgium's worst peacetime terror attacks in Brussels 7 years ago.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. America is listening to Fox News.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location in Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Saturday and has a dump station for your RV. To learn more, call Delta Liquid Energy, 805-239-0616, or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
I'm Susanna Luthi, political reporter and Templeton native, inviting you to join my new show, Free Talk California, Monday afternoons at 1, where we'll discuss the latest California politics and what our state politicians don't want us to know, as well as guests from Sacramento, Washington, D.C., and you. Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi, Monday afternoons at 1, here on AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. The KPRL call-in line is 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Teresa, why don't you finish up the thought you had, and then we'll move on to Jesse's here.
Yep, sure. It'll make a nice segue anyway. So we talked about if you have an LLC or a corporation and your business gets sued, something happens in your business, they can only come after your business assets, not your personal assets. We call those inside liabilities. They're inside the entity. There are also outside liabilities. So if you personally get sued, you get in a car accident and get sued, and you get a judgment against you, your creditor can come after your own assets, but there are ways to protect them from getting inside the LLC and the corporation by virtue of just having those entities in the way. So, and by putting a buy-sell agreement in place, that also helps. And Jesse will get into that for you.
Great. Good deal. So thank you very much. So let me introduce Jesse Hancocks. He is Teresa's associate here in the Paso Robles office. He received his Bachelor's of Art degree in psychology with a focus on human factors and linguistics, graduating cum laude from Cal State University of Northridge. Jesse received his J.D. Juris Doctorate from Pepperdine University School of Law in Malibu. While in law school, Jesse served as the president of the Business and Tax Law Society, and he clerked for a boutique law firm in Ventura County. Until his move to the Central Coast, Jesse was on the board of the Caneo Free Clinic and a member of the Ventura County Bar Association. He is now a member of the San Luis Obispo County Bar Association. Jesse's an active member of our community and volunteers in various service opportunities throughout the area and the local bar association. Jesse enjoys spending time with his family, travel, and is fluent in Spanish. So, Jesse, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. So, we bandy about this term buy-sell agreement all the time, and I know most people look at me like, what are you talking about? So, is a buy-sell agreement used to buy and sell a business?
No, Barry. Like many things in the legal world, the name buy-sell agreement is somehow both exactly right and exactly wrong. A buy-sell agreement is really just an agreement between owners, owners of a corporation or members of an LLC or even of a partnership. The agreement, it details like when the owners can sell their interest, who they could sell it to, and what price. That's the basic concepts of the buy-sell agreement. They're important when something called a triggering event happens. A triggering event is something like somebody wants to retire, an owner goes bankrupt, becomes disabled, is getting divorced, or if they pass away, oftentimes they just maybe want to move on to other ventures, and in the unfortunate case where you need to push somebody out of the business. In other words, the buy-sell agreement's like a prenup. It's a prenupcial agreement for business owners.
Well, that's
makes a great
sense.
Way to look at it, actually.
That makes perfect sense, actually.
Well, and,
yeah.
And you're looking at all the potential eventualities, all those kind of risks that people don't want to think about.
The what-ifs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's really just two flavors of them, a entity agreement, where the entity and the owners are making an agreement. And then there's an agreement called a cross-purchase agreement. There's going to be a test later, wherein the owners have an agreement between themselves on what happens if something happens to one of them. Most of the time in practice, we've found a hybrid works, where you give one group, either the entity or the owners, right of first refusal. They get dibs. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't take up that offer, the next group gets to do it.
Correct. Correct.
That's really amazing. It just speaks to all the incredible level of planning you need to do to be successful and make your business work all the way through.
Right.
So does the entity structure impact the need or the type of a buy-sell agreement that you want to use?
Well, the terms may be somewhat different. The spirit of a buy-sell agreement, it remains the same regardless of the type of entity. Generally, whenever there's more than one person involved, you want to have some type of agreement in place. The terms are often incorporated into different types of documents. In an LLC, a standalone buy-sell agreement is fairly common, whereas in a corporation, a shareholders agreement that incorporates the buy-sell provisions along with other terms is what's used. As same for a partnership agreement, has general overview, how are we going to run this partnership, along with what happens if things go wrong.
Right.
And then that governs most of a general or limited partnership.
Right.
I think one of the big risks that I see a lot when talking to business owners, you know, we usually get to see them about 3 to 5 years into the business getting going, and they have a boilerplate, operating agreement, LLC operating agreement that they got from somebody, and you know it's very vague. It very rarely lays out the specific terms of the contingencies and the terms involved in the contingencies, it's a big planning process. So I think one of the biggest aspects of the planning process, of course, is how is an owner's interest valued.
Well, I actually wanted to touch on what you were just talking about.
Okay,
you run into businesses who are way on down the line. They're 10, 15, 20 years. Two buddies started their plumbing business back in the 90s. It's never really too late to get a business buy-sell agreement, right, until it's actually too late. When you need it,
yeah,
that's when you should have already had it.
Right.
I can see why we get along so well.
Yeah.
But yes, to address how the valuation is, a buy-sell agreement has three goals. simplify the process of the transition upon a change, minimize the accounting and legal fees, and then ensure fairness between the owners ahead of time. And those goals are really encapsulated in setting that price. Fixing a price is usually the biggest problem. And getting that price set up is what the buy-sell agreement is really doing. There's a couple of different ways to determine the purchase price. You could easiest have the owners agree. This is what the price of the value is, or the value of the property is now. Or you could get a valuation. Sometimes evaluation is the most critical part of the buy-sell agreement because it gives a lodestar for the company to work with in the future. There are ways to do a custom design formula using your accounting books, and your accountant can help you with that. But generally, the simplest method has been having owners agree this is what the price is. And then they should probably look at it more often, take a look at it every year. Ideally, they would look at it every year and do a big review with the attorney and CPA. Take a look at, okay, we can't agree now on a new price, but we'll say the old price is good, or we're going to get a valuation, or we're going to work with something that we had. That valuation is usually the best way to do it because that changes every year.
Right.
So, and of course, part of the equation is that once all these things are agreed to, and I may be getting ahead of myself here, in a community property state like California, the spouse has to agree to it too. They have to sign off on all that stuff, don't they?
Right.
Yeah. That's really important. And if a business owner, just a couple of guys, they just spitball a value, you know, without really coming up with something that's credible.
Yeah,
it could be problematic down the line if one of them passes away or is disabled.
Yeah, in the end, having everybody know what's going on up front minimizes that risk of litigation, right, which is where it all may come down to.
Right.
Well, and I think a lot of times we focus on the death aspect of the buy-sell agreement when possibly we should be focusing on the disability aspect, because then the partner that's disabled still has a dog in the hunt.
Right.
To make sure that he's getting out of that value of that business what he wants as his disability payout, really.
Yeah.
It comes right down to it.
And
that's
one of the things that should be looked at during that annual or periodic review. Is the value good? Will the insurance that we have for life or disability cover the needs right now? You know, will they work with our plan? Do we need to restructure what's going on?
Right. Makes so much sense. I bet it doesn't happen every year very often, though. I'm just thinking, like updating those corporate minutes. Huh?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So how is the owner's interest purchased if a buyout is triggered?
Well, a well-drafted buy-sell agreement should have already been negotiated, have all been mutually agreed to by everyone, so everyone knows what's going on, including those spouses that aren't involved. And they typically are geared not to cause the company to expend too many resources in the event of one of those triggering events. We don't want to bankrupt the company just trying to buy back someone's interests. Typically, terms might include a down payment, 10 to 20%, and then equal monthly payments for 10, 20 years, sometimes as short as 2 years, depending on the type of business. When it comes down to the structure of the business itself, it's very dependent on the line of the business. A professional services business is quite different than a ranch out in Creston. So we have lots of different types of people involved. We have different types of properties involved, either personal or real properties.
Great. So one of the things that I find, and I want to see if this is the same for you, when we're talking to our folks about their buy-sell agreements, we also uncover key person needs. You know, so how do you deal with that in the process?
The key person needs generally come out almost right at the front.
Yeah, that's probably what they're thinking initially.
Yep,
almost.
That's
anytime.
There's usually some sort of issue that's come to the forefront where they know, all right, this is going to be a problem, and I don't necessarily want to deal with it later or have someone else deal with it. I think now, while it's a small issue, it'll be easier for my partner to swallow. Mm-hmm. Every partner comes in, every owner comes in with different goals, either personal goals for their family, preserve their legacy or ensure that their family's taken care of. But they also have goals for the business. And when it comes down to it, it's people wanting to build and protect their financial and personal investments that they've made. Make sure that there's a return on that time, either for themselves, if their partner wants out, or they want out, or in the future, if something happens to them.
Do you ever find that when your clients are looking to get financing from a bank, that the bank wants to see that there is a business continuation plan in place if one of the partners goes? Does that come into play from time to time?
Occasionally it does happen. For most financing, they want to make sure everybody's ducks are in a row. And that's one of the documents that they look for.
Okay, great.
Great. So when, under what circumstances may a buy-sell agreement need to be updated?
Well, in that perfect world where they're doing a yearly review, they look at what all the personal and business changes have gone on through the past year. And then if they need to revise something, they'll take a look at specific important provisions. Usually it's those when, who, and price. The who can we sell it to? When can I sell it? What other restrictions do we need to add? Has there been a new owner? Has there been a death of a spouse of an owner? Is there some other type of planning that we need to do? A lot of it, we want to help them integrate their estate planning, because that is a big factor with what happens after someone passes, because someone has to abide by this buy-sell agreement.
Right.
Like I said before, the insurance provisions are very important to review. The disability provisions, those can change yearly.
Yep.
And often it's not something that everybody wants to talk about.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Like our business.
That's right. All right. Well, listen, those are great things. I may have a couple more comments to make on this topic before we pass the baton back to Teresa after the break. When we return, we will talk about orderly business succession planning and the tax implications of selling your business. We'll be back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Charles Payne, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages finishing lower as tech stocks tumble. The sector has been winning for much of the year, helping boost the market despite the banking crisis. But today, the tech sector was among the biggest laggards. In the meantime, the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature is still in the spotlight, with three top banking regulators facing questions about their oversight of the failed lenders on Capitol Hill. Shares of AMC Entertainment surging after the Intersect website reported that Amazon is weighing an acquisition of the movie theater chain. And Spicemaker McCormick spicing things up on Wall Street today, with its stock popping 9% on a first quarter sales and profit beat as the company benefited from multiple price increases. The Dow winners, Boeing, McDonald's, and Chevron. The Dow decliners, American Express, Visa, and United Health Group. The Dow falling 38 points, the Nasdaq down 53, S&P 500 down 6. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Inflation is nothing more than legalized theft. Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Paul, and to preserve your wealth, I highly recommend keeping physical gold in your retirement account. To learn more, text the word SHELTER to 989898 to get a free info kit on gold IRAs from Birch Gold, which is the only gold IRA company I trust. So text SHELTER to 989898 to request your free info kit right now.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
We're kind of a small electronics store. We try to focus on a lot of the hobbyist areas.
There are three Coast Electronics Radio Shack stores in the county, one in Morro Bay, one in San Luis Obispo, and one in Paso Robles. Here's Chris from the Paso Robles store.
So we started to get more Arduino stuff in to hopefully support some robotics engineering with the local high schools, and we try to keep in some resistors, transistors, diodes, little components like that to help the hobbyists in the area, because it's really hard to find that stuff elsewhere. We carry TVs, we have Roku boxes, we carry some Ring cameras, phone protectors and cases, phone cables.
Thank you, Chris, from the Coastal Electronics Radio Shack store in Paso Robles. Remember, they can mount that TV on your wall or even repair your vintage stereo.
Shop local. Shop Coast Electronics, your Radio Shack dealer in Paso Robles, San Luis Obispo, and Morro Bay, where the knowledgeable staff and team of technicians are ready to serve you, all with a smile.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Teresa Rhine and Jesse Hancocks of the Teresa Rhine Law Group. The call-in KPRL call-in number is 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Jesse, just to wrap up on the buy-sell stuff, I mean, what I'm gathering from your comments is that what everybody wants here is the surviving part owners want the company, and they want continuity. They want to keep running this company without interference from the heirs, basically.
Yep. Nobody wants to work with their partner's spouse.
Or kids.
Or kids. They don't want somebody else coming in that didn't have a stake in the game to begin with,
right,
coming in and starting managing.
Yep.
They always want to manage.
Right. Right. And, of course, the heirs want their money.
Yes.
They want the value of the business, a fair value, fair market value of the business. And, ultimately, the whole buy-sell process is all about orderly and successful transition of business ownership at death or disability or some other contingency,
retirement, or
some other contingency that's laid out in the buy sell.
The goal is to make the transition before you need to make the transition.
Right.
It's all there, just all right, ready to go.
Okay, great. That's good. I hope our listeners who have businesses and business partners, and I think this is a really important area that you know, we focus on a lot, as you well know. One other thing, and maybe Teresa will just answer this, because this may have something to do more with business succession, is, you know, we were talking about, you know, business valuation, and the fact is when you have a valuation, the IRS generally accepts that valuation, correct?
If you have a properly done valuation, yes,
yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's really important as well. Okay, so we're back with Teresa, and what we're talking about is business succession, and I'm sure that takes a lot of different forms, you know, of how that all works. But the first question we have is, when should a business owner start to plan for succession of the business?
It might sound funny to say they should start to plan from the beginning, that someone's going to need to take over. But I would say, basically, as soon as you know you have a business that needs a succession plan, meaning what if something happened to you, is there a viable business that someone needs to continue? You should have a plan in place.
And that includes like retirement, or you want to sell it. I mean, it could be any number of contingencies beyond what we were just talking about.
Yeah, right? And people tend to think death, right? The business succession planning means, well, what if I die? What happens to my business? But of equal concern should be, what happens if you become incapacitated? People are living longer, and incapacity is becoming a much bigger issue. So that having a plan in place that can be handled in the short term for incapacity and longer term reasons is very important.
Okay.
Right. We have many family businesses in this area. What are some of the special considerations to take into account in family succession planning? For example, equity issues among kids and things like that.
Yeah, the old, is fair the same as equal? Yes.
Yeah.
And that always depends on who you're talking to. But yeah, right. Family businesses, particularly if there's one child involved or maybe two children, but not all of the children involved in the business, raise their own concerns, of course. It gets even more complicated if it's children in law, you know, if it's the daughter's husband that's involved in the business or something like that. That gets even more complicated. So the key there is planning and talking it out. You know, we have offices in Riverside and Paso Robles. Both of those areas are, well, less so now for Riverside, but agricultural areas. So we have a lot of family businesses that are what we call land rich and cash poor. So the business has a lot of land. There's a lot of value in the land. There's value in the crops or the whatever it is they're working on the land. And they don't have a lot of cash. So how do you balance that out between the kids if one's working in the business? So often what we'll do is say, okay, maybe one of the kids or the group of kids that aren't working in the active business, they're going to own the land, and the kids who are working in the active business will have the active business. Now, that makes one set of kids the landlord to the other set of kids, so we make sure we've got all the agreements in place ahead of time. There's lots of things that can be done, you know, specific to different businesses, but where there's kids involved, you have to coordinate it with your estate plan, and you have to coordinate to make sure everybody's going to, they're maybe not all going to be happy. A good settlement is when everybody's equally unhappy, equally happy, I guess, would be the same too. So,
well, you know, we see a lot of businesses where you have one partner, let's say he or she is ready to retire. The other partner is maybe 10 years younger, 5 to 10 years younger. But partner A, the 65-year-old, has a 40-year-old who's working in the business.
Right.
And then you've got all those various different family structure issues. What do you call them? Family system issues.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And sometimes a buy-sell agreement can help with that as well. In a limited liability company, you can also deal with that through who you've named as the manager. So the kids who inherited, maybe they inherit it and they get it for equity purposes, profit purposes, but they don't have any management control. That's easy to work out in an agreement.
Right. That makes sense.
As long as you do the agreement.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yep. Yes.
Right.
Can you just touch one more time on the role that business valuation plays in this process of succession?
Yeah, so often the succession plan, you know, it's going to come down to one of three things. Either you're going to sell it to somebody on the inside, meaning one of your kids or a key employee, or you're going to sell it to somebody on the outside or merge with some other company, or you're just going to close it and walk away. In all three of those cases, you know, making a decision on how you're going to do that, you should probably know what the value is that you're walking away from or that you're selling. Otherwise, you can't really plan for it. You may be thinking, you know, I'm going to sell my business when I retire, and that's my retirement plan. But if you don't know what your business is worth with you extracted from that business, you might not have a very good retirement plan.
Right. And that brings a point that we always make to folks about business valuation. And that is that, you know, if you don't do a business valuation once a year, that's like not looking at your stock, monthly stock reports, you know, your statements from your investment reports every month when they come in. I mean, most people look at it online every day as the market's going up and down these days.
Right.
But knowing what your business is worth is kind of like the touchstone of the whole process.
And we've dealt with some clients very recently who thought their business was worth something and were pleasantly surprised to find out it was worth a lot more. And so that kind of changes the game, you know, for them in many ways.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's really important.
We have one recently that the people that she thought were going to buy the business decided not to. But when she saw that the business was worth about 50% more than what she thought it was worth, she decided to go back to work and make it worth a lot more than that, you know, and spend a few more years. So it was almost like a shot in the arm to her.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It was really great.
It's a really good thing to know.
Yeah.
So how does the entity structure affect the ultimate sale or other transfer of the business?
So that can affect it in many ways. So it depends on the entity that we're talking about. And of course, if you're a sole proprietorship and selling your business, you're going to have a lot of trouble because you're going to have to separate the business from yourself. And that's often very difficult to do. But if you're in a corporation, then there's two types of corporations. There's a C corporation, which is its own entity, pays taxes. And then you can either distribute the money to the shareholders and they pay taxes again, or you can accumulate for future use. So, and then there's an S corporation where the corporation pays a minimum tax and everything flows through to the shareholder. Whether they've taken the money out or not, they're going to pay taxes on it. So that sounds like a bad thing, but can often be a good thing. But if you're going to sell your business, you want to make sure you know which one of those it is and what that tax hit is going to be. We often do not put real estate into C corporations because when you get it out of the corporation, there's a big tax hit on it. Typically, real estate is held because real estate appreciates so greatly in California. I haven't looked at the news today, but I assume that's still true, that it's still appreciating.
We hope so.
Yeah. So you want to know what assets you have and what the tax effect is going to be before you enter into any kind of a sale or a transfer. Another kind of general thing to keep in mind, if it's your kids or grandkids or family members you're passing the business on to, it's usually better for them to inherit it than to buy it from you or to get it as a gift during lifetime, simply because of the tax basis rules. Yeah. So that's another thing to take a look at.
Yeah, absolutely. So what tax savings are possible in selling a business?
So we have a client right now that we're working with in reorganizing the business because he had a business associate, friend, colleague that he talked to who had sold their business and ended up with this gigantic tax bill. And he said,
when you say taxes, it's usually a capital gain tax?
It can be, income tax. It's not always capital gain. But income tax, in this case, because the business was sold while the gentleman was still alive, so it wasn't estate tax, it was income tax. And he came to me and said, I want to retire. At the time, he said 3 years. I want to retire in 3 years, so I want to set my business up to sell, but I don't want to pay a lot of taxes. What can I do? And working with his accountant, this is a great example of one, a qualified small business stock. So if you have a certain type of stock in a small business, and it's a C corporation, there's a $5 million exemption if you set it up right.
Ooh.
Yeah. Saving $5 million.
That's a good thing.
Exactly.
On that happy note, we're going to hold Teresa and Jesse on into the fourth segment and wrap that thought up and give you a couple more, tell you what's coming up in next week's show. So stand by.
We asked Nick Medeiros, CPA at 8930 Barrel Road in Atascadero, what's new at the office?
We've added some new admin staff, so that's been an awesome help to be more responsive to client phone calls and those folks coming in and out the door. That way my poor Kathy isn't so inundated and feeling buried. And a couple of years ago, I brought in a former colleague of mine that's a partner, and his name's Oscar. And then this year, we brought in Essen, another former colleague of ours, that's also joined the team. So it's nice having other help around the office just to talk to, another professional to bounce ideas off of and collaborate with. So he's getting his feet wet now, getting into the grind of a tax season.
You'll find Oscar, Essen, and Nick at Nick Medeiros CPA, 8930 Marl Road, Atascadero. Call 805-466-7249.
I don't know what to do.
About what?
My wife wants to remodel the kitchen, but we don't have that kind of money.
Want to see what we did? Take a peek at this.
Wow, that looks great. Who did your remodel?
It's not a remodel. I had Espeak Painting paint our cabinets. Now they're like new, and they're my wife's favorite color.
Espeak Painting, huh?
Yeah, they're local, right here in Atascadero. They're easy to deal with, from the estimate all the way to the final brush stroke. And getting a quote was easy. I did it online. It's way cheaper than a remodel.
Then I better take a peek at this Espeak Painting.
Well, you know what they say, happy wife, happy life.
You got that right.
Take a peek at Espeak Painting and get a beautiful new look for your cabinets without an expensive remodel. Espeak specializes in cabinet painting as well as residential exteriors, interiors, and HOAs. Take a peek at Espeak Painting. Book a quote appointment quickly and easily 24/7 at espeakpainting.com. That's SPEEKPainting.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Teresa Ryan and Jesse Hancocks of the Teresa Ryan Law Group, with offices in Paso Robles and Riverside. Before we go back, Teresa mentioned something about saving $5 million, so that got my interest. But but basically, I want to let you know who's going to be on next week's show, because this is going to be another great show. We're going to be featuring Will Barnaby of Central Coast Lending in Paso Robles. And he's going to be talking about a very, very hot topic in retirement planning today called reverse mortgages. You know, with so many people that have such a high percent of their personal wealth, especially folks over 62, in their home equity, reverse mortgages are something to take a look at. You want to retire comfortably, you're worried about potential unforeseen medical or long-term care costs, or leaving a financial legacy, reverse mortgages may be the way for you to go. So, Teresa, let's circle back here and talk a little bit about those tax savings again.
Let's talk about saving $5 million.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Got my interest. So, do you have to have it first?
You do. Yeah, okay. To save it. Okay. But this qualified small business stock is a stock held by a small business, which this always cracks me up. The IRS defines as $50 million. A small business, right? So if you have C corporation stock in a small business and you have held it for 5 years, you can qualify for this exemption when you sell the stock. Now, that you can't sell the assets and still get the exemption. You can sell the stock. If you're selling it to your kids or you're selling it to someone willing to buy the stock, because liabilities go along with that, so sometimes that's harder. That's a great exemption to have. Say $5 million exempt from taxes is pretty good. But if you're an S corporation, you don't qualify. That's not C corporation stock. So you've got to think about it 5 years ahead of time. Because you have to hold it for 5 years. We have to reorganize the company, get the right kind of stock issued, transfer the assets to a C corporation, issue the qualified small business stock, keep going for 5 years, and you qualify. It's worth it. And the client I mentioned to you said he wanted to retire in 3 years. We walked him through this program, and he said, 5 is fine. I can do 5.
Yeah, that makes sense. That much money, another 2 years.
Yep.
Makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Oh, so one of the things that seems to be the most daunting for people when we talk to them about, okay, they want to get a valuation because they want to sell the business, is how do I put together the deal? Okay, so how? Right. So I'm sure you help clients do that. So what are there some simple steps that they should think about when they're putting their deal points together with you or whatever, with their other business partners, family members?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is that people tend to feel like, we see this both in estate planning and business planning, that they feel like they need to have the answer before they come and see us, which is not, I mean, they call us counselors for a reason. We can help you walk through. We take a look at your business. We take a look at typically your last three tax returns to kind of see what's going on. Always want to have the CPA involved. Yeah, we can start to work with you to come up with what that plan is. We don't just document what you come in and tell us.
Yeah. What do you find to be the biggest mistake that people make when they're selling their business?
Not planning ahead of time.
Yeah. Okay. It's the old 7 P's, right? Proper prior planning prevents poor performance.
No, yes.
I have to make sure I don't say, I don't know what words I can not say on the air. But if somebody wants to know what that P that
the
I left out
P.
is, send an email to info@blazinbear.com and I'll be happy to respond. So
we love to hear stories, and our listeners often like to hear stories. So could you tell some stories, obviously anonymous, about businesses that didn't do the right kind of planning?
I have a hypothetical client.
Okay.
Where it was a generation that used to do things on a handshake a lot. And it worked. It worked for that generation. But we're now two generations down. But one of the gentlemen who was part of it was a partnership of 5. There was no documentation, and we can't get any documentation in place because nobody wants to agree to anything. And he is now in business there's two different partnerships, and one he says is 4 widows and me. And the other one is 1 widow, him, and then like 8 children of the other 3 partners.
Oh,
and trying
goodness.
To get anything done in this entity is... so difficult. It takes twice as much work. It takes twice as much time and effort and hair pulling.
And about 10 times more stomach acid.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
But don't they understand that you charge by the hour?
I think everybody feels like, well, it's the business paying it. But, you know, ultimately that's you paying it too.
Yeah.
That's profit you wouldn't have gotten.
Well, while we're on the subject of stories, then could you tell a story of somebody who did it right? Like they had their act together and did the whole prop.
That would be all
planning.
Of our clients,
right?
Because they come in and see us. Well, I think I did just tell you one who did it right.
You know,
he came ahead of time and said,
right.
"I want to plan." You know,
right?
And
that's true.
He did that because he talked to somebody who had done it wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So I was reading an article about this topic in Investopedia, which I'm sure you don't have a whole lot of respect for, but at least they have some good information, general information, high level. But one of the things that kind of surprised me was they said one of the things that the seller has to be mindful about is handling the proceeds of the sale. You know, and do you provide advice on that? Have you seen some real disasters when somebody gets their nest egg and within a short period of time they squander it away?
I haven't seen it from someone selling a business because typically it's such hard-earned money that there's a little more respect
for
it.
That's interesting.
I have had two clients who were lottery winners, though.
Oh,
wow.
And that's very complicated.
Those are good stories. Yeah.
Yeah, because in one case, they were people who were used to having money anyway and had good management. In another case, they thought that money would last forever, and they had the 20-year payout, and it did not last.
Really?
As soon as the 20 years was up, they were having financial problems.
Really, right.
Yeah.
Really. Oh, my.
Yeah.
So before we close out, because I think we got about another minute or 30 seconds or whatever, how's the best way for people to get in touch with you guys?
The best way to get in touch with us is by phone. We have a local number, 805-991-7433, or we could be reached by email at teresa@trlawgroup.net or jesse@trlawgroup.net.
All right.
Great.
Do you have any closing thoughts here, Susan?
No, I just think this has been a really wonderful session. I bet our listeners have gotten a lot of value. I have learned a lot myself, and it just speaks so much to what we try to beat the drum about all the time, planning ahead.
That's right. So remember, Blazon Bear Insurance Services is here to help you protect what matters most with the strategic use of life disability, long-term care insurance, fixed annuities, and business valuation. Next week, Reverse Mortgages with Will Barnaby. Have a great week.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters with Barry Fisher and Susan Blaze. Send your questions and show topic ideas to Barry@blazonbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.